As it turned out, Doc was able to sneak in the front door with his bag, moving extremely quietly. He cleaned Rockaway's wounds and gave him two injections, one for the pain, the other an antibiotic. They'd rigged lanterns in the mill. Valentine had considered running the tiny portable generator to spare the vehicle's batteries, but decided against it. A storm this intense couldn't last much longer, not in Kentucky.
Contact before sing, Major. I have Colonel Lambert on the line, and she'd like to speak to you.
Thanks, Habanero.
Valentine, we're getting reports of rabies outbreaks all across the Mississippi Plateau. Report position and status, please.
Grand Junction. We've just had a brush with them, sir.
Repeat, please.
We fought a skirmish. Two casualties. Well, one casualty and one bite.
Major, I'm hearing strange reports about this strain. The infected cases are unusually strong and ferocious.
I won't vouch for the ferocious, but they are strong. Exceptionally strong. Like bears.
Are there other outbreaks in Kentucky you know of?
No, sir. This is the first we've seen of it. How are things at base?
Quiet. No sign of it. A new patrol has just gone out to check Owensboro. We've lost contact with the town.
Orders?
Get back as quickly as you can. The Underground has informed us that that armored column has moved south from Bloomington and is now outside Owensboro. They've been shelling the city.
We'll be mobile as soon as the weather lets up.
Good luck. Report when you're moving again.
Wilco, signing off.
Signing off.
We were lucky, I think. I bet there's only a handful of rabies left in this town. Mostly ones who were torn up in scrapes with them and succumbed to the infection.
Lucky? What about Rockaway, Stuck?
I said we, not him.
With time to think and a hot cup of Mrs. Okum's tea inside him, Valentine realized the Currians had played a brilliant double cross in Kentucky. Or perhaps it was a triple cross, if you considered the attack on the Kentucky River position a double cross. He almost had to admire the genius of it. If the attack on the AOK had routed the principal body of armed and organized men in central Kentucky, the Currians would have been in the position to act as saviors when the rabies virus hit. The new Universal Church could show up en masse, ready to inject the populace with either a real anti-serum or a saline solution, all the while persuading the populace of the advantages of returning to their semi-protected status in the Currian Order. As it turned out, the attack failed, but it also served to concentrate their enemies. With the storm raging, they wouldn't be able to spread out and contain the virus to a few hotspots. Instead, the AOK would suffer the agonies of men knowing their families were threatened and unable to do a damn thing about it. Given the brief existence of the AOK, it might dissolve entirely, like salt in a rainstorm, fragmenting into bands of men desperate to return home. The one patch of light in the snowy, howling gloom was that Kentucky wasn't the earthquake and volcano-ravaged populace of 2022. The Legworm clans were armed to the teeth, man, woman, and child, and were used to living and working within the confines of armed camps organized for defense. Ravy's bands fought dumb. They didn't coordinate, concentrate properly, or pick a weak spot in their target's defenses, except by accident. Valentine didn't like the look of Bolnitz. He had been pale and quiet ever since the madness between Bushmaster and the gate. Worried that the journalist might be going into shock from stress alone, Valentine squatted down next to him.
Something for your notebook at last, eh, Pencil?
When I said I owe you, I meant it. I owe you the truth. I've been flying under false colors, I'm afraid. Here. It's one thing to write about wars and warriors and strategy. It looks very different when you're looking down the barrel of a gun. Or up one.
Valentine read a few paragraphs from Bolnitz's notebook. It was always a strange sensation to parse another's depiction of oneself, like hearing someone describe the rooms in one's own home, bare facts attached to memories and emotions, but as artificial and obvious as plastic tags in the ears of livestock. Valentine took in the words, in the Clarion's familiar, sententious style and typeface, with the unsettling feeling of reading his own obituary.
The terror of Little Rock during the late rising against Consul Solon, David Valentine, has created a career that makes for exciting, if disturbing, reading. Trailed by a hulking, hairy-handed killer bodyguard named Ang Ka, Valentine is a man of desperate gambits and vicious enmities without remorse or regret. The corpses of gutted, strung-up POWs and murder to followers like the Smalls.
I only showed that to you because I can't reconcile the figure described in Southern Command's archives, at least the ones I was given clearance to see, and Clarion's articles, with the person in the flesh. I just thought it was time for a little honesty. Pencil Bolnitz is a fiction. It's the name of my first editor, the English teacher who helped us run the school newspaper. My real name is Llewellyn. Cooper Llewellyn.
You thought that if I knew you were from the Clarion, what? I'd run you off base?
Something like that.
I have to say, I like Pencil Bolnitz better. You seem like the kind of guy who'd observe and relate what he observed, without trying to psychoanalyze a man he'd known for only a few weeks.
You're right to be mad, but there's a sign up at the Clarion. Anyone can transcribe. A journalist reveals.
I can't see why your paper is so beloved for its editorial page, if that's the best they can do. It's easy to come up with something like that for any profession. Anyone can disrobe. A stripper profits.
Ravies. One of the most terrifying weapons in the Kurian Order's arsenal is the disease that makes man revert to a howling beast, a lizard brain seeking to kill, feed, and yes, sometimes even procreate. How they remove all the higher brain functions, leaving the lower full of savage cunning and reckless determination, only their elite scientists would be able to say. The fear of a rabies outbreak is one way of keeping their human herds in line. There's such a thing as civilizational memory, and the human strata of the Kurian Order have been taught that only timely arrival of help from Kur stemmed the howling tide that threatened to wash away mankind in the red number year of 2022. They instinctively know that without the protection of the towers, the screamers might return. Anyone who's heard the dive bomber wail of a rabies victim in full cry has the unhappy privilege of hearing it repeated in nightmares for years to come. Of course, in the Freeholds, they know that rabies is just another Kurian trick up one of the sleeves of a determined and ruthless creature with more limbs than can be easily counted on a living specimen. Folk remedies abound, all of them nearly useless. A bucket of ice-cold water is said to distract a sufferer long enough for you to make an escape. If you suck a wound clean while chewing real mint gum mixed with pieces of pickled ginger, onion, and garlic, you'll never catch an infection from a bite. Pregnant women are naturally immune. This particular canard leads to all manner of bizarre remedies as others seek the mystic benefits, from drinking breast milk to pouring umbilical cord blood into a fresh wound. And of course, the only sure way to stop a rabies sufferer from getting at you is to shoot them in the head. Of course, anyone who's ever emptied a magazine into the center mass of an oncoming screamer knows that they go down and stay down when suffering sucking chest wounds, cardiac damage, or traumatic blood loss. No, the only facts absolutely known about rabies is that it is a disease that affects brain tissue and the nervous system. Sufferers don't feel any pain and are hyper-aware, ravenous, and irritable, and if they are startled or provoked, they will try to rend and bite the source into submission and an easy meal. Heart rate and blood pressure both increase. Most brainwave patterns decrease, save for the delta, the wave most associated with dreams, and beta, which increases during anxiety or intense concentration. Many wonder why the Kurians, usually so careful with lives and the aura that might be harvested, allow whole populations to be reduced by the disease. David Valentine had two theories. One is that the rabies encounters shocked and wore down professional military types. No one enjoys gunning down children and preteens who, under ideal conditions, could be easily kept away with a walking stick or a riot shield until they drop from exhaustion. It took David Valentine months to quit hearing the screams in his sleep following his first encounter with rabies near the Red River in 2065. The other is that sufferers were harvested like everyone else in the Kurian Order, with the disease simply adding flavor to the aura thanks to the unknown tortures of body and mind. Stuck was right, as it turned out. There weren't many cases in town. As they switched vehicles for refueling from the trailer, only one more rabie attacked, and Frat brought her down with a clean headshot. They prepared to leave the mill once there was full daylight.
We're going to try to keep moving to make it back to Fort Sing without another stop. We'll take on rescues of anyone alongside the road until the vehicles are at capacity.
Isn't that dangerous, sir? They might be bit. And if we lose a vehicle, who'll end up walking if there's no excess capacity?
And what about that kid? He's been bit.
He's in Boneyard with his mother and Doc keeping an eye on him. At the moment, he's not symptomatic, not even trembling. So the iodine may have got it, or Southern Command's last year's vaccination may work against this strain. In any case, they'll keep him sedated. As for rescues, if we lose a vehicle, we'll travel overloaded and chance the fine. Oh, one more thing. Let's break out the winter camouflage. We're still soldiers, and we still have eyes in the sky watching us and enemies to fight.
The winter camouflage was mostly old bedsheets and fancy tablecloths cut into ponchos, and extra felt that could be wrapped around your shins and tied with twine to create extra warm gaiters. Valentine changed the route order. Bushmaster would go first in order to clear drifts. Rover would follow, and then Boneyard and Chuckwagon brought up the rear. The two Southern Command bears would ride in the Chuckwagon, as they'd most likely be attacked from the rear by Ravies running on foot. Valentine had never heard of a Ravy driving. They wouldn't use the motorcycles at all, not with the snow and this strain of Ravies that could leap the way they'd seen at the Millgate. Longshot volunteered to ride in the open atop Bushmaster so she could stand up and look over drifts, but Valentine told her to keep warm out of the wind. So they pulled out. Valentine would mark progress by chalking a rough mile marker of empty circles on one of the roof struts of Rover. Every 10 miles, he'd mark one off. As they pulled out of Grand Junction and made it back to the old federal highway, he filled in the first of the 12 circles. With room in Rover, thanks to Mrs. Okum being behind in Boneyard, Brother Mark now rode shotgun, and Bolnitz, desirous of keeping away from Stuck, crammed himself into the backmost seat. Valentine sat behind Habanero so he could consult his maps and speak into the driver's ear, Duvalier next to him. The snowfall had stopped, but the wind still threw up enough snow to make visibility bad and kept the convoy to less than 5 miles an hour. The heavy cloud cover made for gloomy thoughts.
Anything from the AOK on the radio, Habanero?
No, sir. Got some CB to some lady looking for her man. Says she's scared.
Note her position. We'll report her if we can get in touch with anyone else.
I wonder if this is it for Kentucky, then. How widespread is the virus, do you think? Think they hit the Republics, too?
It's a tough new strain. Seems a waste not to do as much damage as you can. Either way, Southern Command needs to know it's here. Any luck with the radio, Habanero?
Maybe atmospherics are just bad.
What do you mean, if this is it? Kentucky survived the rabies plague in 2022 when nobody knew what was happening. They'll survive this. People are more prepared for this sort of crisis now.
Someone told me once that the Kurians were handling both sides of this war. If they ever became really worried about us, they'd just wipe us out.
Of all people, Valentine, I'm surprised you would consider such nonsense. Why would they want the freeholds? We run guns into the Kurian zones, broadcast news, and give people a safe place to run to if they get away. They can't want that.
I don't know. Having a war going on can be handy. You can blame shortages on it, deaths. Tell folks that the reason the days of milk and honey are a long way off is because there's a war to be won first. And it's a convenient place to send ambitious, restive men who might otherwise challenge Kerr.
I don't think so, unless they are keeping it even from the church. I rose fairly high before my soul fought back against my interest, and many times I handled communications for my Archon. I saw nothing to indicate that was true.
Maybe they wouldn't trust such an important detail to written communications.
There are 5-year plenaries attended by a majority of Archons from around the world. None but the Archons attend. They depart with masses of facts and figures. Not that the thick binders of data do them much good. You cannot trust the statistics of a functionary whose life depends on pleasing the boss with the totals in a report.
I wouldn't mind dropping in on one of those and changing the agenda. Where are they held?
The location is held secret until the last minute. Probably because of vigorous, ambitious young men such as yourself with similar ideas. Let me see. Since I entered the church, it has been held at Paris, Cairo, Bahrain, Rome, and Rio de Janeiro. Not that there aren't important churchmen from Indonesia or Middle Africa or the subcontinent. I believe the Archons simply like to see a few sights and shop.
They saw their share of sights on the drive, descending from the Mississippi Plateau in central Kentucky. Valentine would rather not have seen any of them, and it took a while for him to forget them. He could see smudges on the horizon, barns and houses and whole blocks of towns burning. They saw cars and trucks with doors torn off and windshields punched in, blood spattered on the upholstery and panels. The column passed huddled figures along the side of the road, sitting in meager shelter afforded by ruins of houses and ancient rusted shells of cars and trucks. Many of them had frozen to death, fleeing God knew what, blind in the night. When the column saw a figure floundering in the snow, waving its arms, they slowed and shouted, If it shouted back in English, they let them climb into the back of the chuck wagon. If not, target practice, Chieftain called it. For the Ravies, the snow worked against them. Valentine tried to turn his mind off, not to think about the future. The old Kurian trick might just work again. If that armored column massing outside Owensboro came into Kentucky and plunged into the heartland of the state and the Kentucky Alliance, bringing order by killing off the diseased and dangerous, the Kerr might just be hailed as heroes. At the very least, they'd have little difficulty seizing key road junctions, towns, and rail lines. The diseased, ravaged AOK wouldn't be in any kind of shape to contest the matter. His own command would be hounded out of the state, and Southern Command, instead of having a quietly neutral bunch of legworm ranchers, would have a full-fledged enemy with access to some hard-to-stop cavalry. Five circles filled in.
I think I've got a Kentucky contact, sir. Major Valentine, they're asking for you by name. You know somebody called... Ankle?
Anka!
Very short of ammunition. Before I lost contact with friends in the Shenandoah, I was told they had military roadblocks in all the principal passes, and there were reports of aircraft flying in the mountains above the...
How are you, old horse?
My David! Can it be that you are caught up in this too?
Afraid so. What's your status?
It goes hard, my David. There are so few of us left. I sent some of the men away so they could see to their homes and families. I only hope I did not delay too long. We are, well, best not to say too much over the radio. But a goodbye may be in order.
Don't draw attention to yourself. They seem to be drawn by light and noise. You haven't been bitten, have you?
His words were lost to static. Habanero adjusted the dial.
We've used blasting explosives to try to draw them up into the mountains, away from our populations. We have perhaps been too successful. One might walk across the throng using heads like paving stones. Excuse me, there's some commotion. I must sign off.
Good luck, old friend.
I hope you don't mind that I listened in on that conversation, Major.
Depends. Who was taking notes? Pencil Bolnitz or Cooper Llewellyn?
I don't know, Major. All I can do is try to be accurate about what I'm hearing.
I hope you're getting it right, sir. That's the hulking, hairy-handed killer I know.
Bolnitz drew away, pencil trembling. Valentine realized he was snarling. Seven circles filled in. They were getting closer to the Ohio now. The land became less hilly and was filled with more old farms. Out of the hills, the drifts grew less and less and finally disappeared entirely. The snow hadn't been as heavy in this part of Kentucky. Valentine put Rover back at the head of the column, but the ice patches were still treacherous.
Major, Doc says we should pull over.
Why?
He wants you to look at Rockaway.
Stopping is not ideal, Habanero. He's symptomatic?
Doc just wants you to pull over.
Roger that. Pull over. Well, Doc?
He's symptomatic, Major. Starting to shake.
You have him sedated?
Yes.
What's the usual medical procedure for rabies?
90% of the time, they're quietly euthanized. Some are kept around to try various kinds of experimental medications. They don't feel pain from what we can tell by brainwave functioning glandular response. Oh, and early cases are important for study to develop a vaccine. That's where the booster shots come from. Too bad he missed this last series issue date October. We should have thought to bring some.
I want you to end this, Mr. Valentine.
End this?
I can't watch him suffer.
He's not suffering, is he, Doc?
It's true. Not while the sedatives hold out. Even when they wear off, provided we can keep him in the bed, I'm not sure suffering is the right word for what he'll be going through.
Any decision about your son's health, I'll leave to the doc.
I work for her ladyship, I'll remind you, Valentine.
A rich woman outranks the Hippocratic Oath.
Major, please. I'm in no hurry. I'm just wondering if I'll still have a job if I ever make it back to the Hooked OC.
Do what you can, Doc. Anything else?
One more thing, Major. In my younger days, before I settled down to bring babies into the world and plaster broken bones and dig bullets out, I was a researcher. This is a perfectly ordinary piece of medical technology from 50 years back. Nowadays, I use it for interesting butterfly pupa and leaves. It instantly freezes and preserves like liquid nitrogen without all the fuss and bother. I've been taking samples of Kev's blood as the disease progressed to see how his body's fighting it, and to see just how the rabies virus is attacking and changing him. It could be useful to Southern Command in developing a serum for vaccination. Would you please?
I'll get it back across the Mississippi as soon as I can.
Thank you, Major.
My son. My beautiful son.
Keep an eye on her, Doc.
Understood. Major, in all honesty, sir, she does love her son. She loved all her sons. Deep down, I think she was really trying to get him back home, but make it his idea. That's all.
Hey, Major! You see that plane up there? Two-engine job. Looks kind of like it's circling.
Pratt, how you on a motorcycle?
Decent, sir. I used one to get around in Kansas.
I want you to courier something important back to Fort Sing for us. And if necessary, get it all the way back to the Mississippi. That'll be for Colonel Lambert to decide.
Sir, I don't want to leave you in the middle of this mess.
You'll do as I ask, Lieutenant. If you want to be addressed as a captain in a week, that is.
Captain, sir?
A platoon of wolves this far outside Southern Command is supposed to have a captain in charge. I hope you'll be it.
With honor, sir.
They gave Stuck's big motorcycle to Frat. Frat grabbed his rifle and his bag and very carefully put Doc's sample freezer in a hard case. Doc added a final blood sample and a note before packing it on the bike. Valentine shook Frat's hand and the young man tied a scarf around his face.
Frat, even if we don't get through, these blood samples need to. They're more important to Southern Command than everything in this convoy.
Understood, sir. I'll get them there.
Valentine watched the youth rumble off, trying not to think of his own misadventures as a courier. Maybe somewhere on the road, Frat would meet another capable young teen, the way Valentine had long ago met Frat. Part of being in service was helping train talented young people to take your place. By the time Frat had left, the plane had taken off too, flying back to the north, probably across the Ohio in just a few minutes.
Habanero. See if you can find a road turning north. I'd like to see what that plane is up to.
Jesus.
Looks like a flea market that broke up quick.
Valentine wouldn't forget the sight of the body field as long as he lived. Even as an old man, he'd remember details, be able to traverse the gentle slopes dotted with briar thickets, stepping from body to body. You had to choose route and footing if you didn't want to step on some child. Judging from the injuries and old bloodstains on the bodies, these were rabies victims. Some had torn or missing clothes, and all had the haggard, thin-skinned look of someone in the grip of the raving madness.
What killed him, Doc?
My guess is some kind of nerve agent. That accounts for some of the grotesque posing. Whatever it was, it happened quickly. Notice anything funny about these?
There's nothing funny in this field.
Strange, then. Look at the rabies.
Valentine had a tough time looking close. This was like peeping into a Nazi gas chamber. Though he felt a bit of a hypocrite, he would have turned the Bushmaster's cannon on them if they'd been attacking his vehicles.
I don't...
The hair! Ears, chins, eyebrows, arm hair. Worse on the men than the women, but everyone but the kids are showing very rapid body hair growth. A side effect of this strain of rabies, perhaps.
I wonder where the pilot of that plane is now.
Having a cup of coffee?
I don't think they really knew what was happening. Rabies does cloud the mind a bit.
Wolf's found something interesting, sir!
The vehicle tracks were easy to find, and sadly, easier to follow. They stood at the center of the field, in an empty space like a little donut hole surrounded by bodies.
Okay, they drove in, or the rabies found them here. Then, when the rabies were good and tight around the vehicle, those inside slaughtered them all in a matter of minutes.
This one was still twitching. He tried to crawl towards the truck.
Maybe it was a field bakery van or a chuck wagon. Food, you think? Ask it's fresh bread hanging off it? They look hungry.
Rabies does that. You get ravenous. It's a hard virus on the system. The body's usual defense mechanisms, fatigue, nausea, that discourage activity during hunger, are overridden.
Valentine wondered what could attract such throngs of rabies, yet keep them from tearing whatever made those tracks to bits. His own column would probably have need of such a gimmick before they returned to Fort Sing. 9 circles filled in. Maybe it was the sun in their eyes as they drove west. Maybe it was error caused by driver fatigue. Maybe simple carelessness. They dipped as they passed under a railroad bridge, much overgrown, and suddenly there were rabies on either side of them and the headlights of a big armored car before them. It wasn't an equal contest. Rover folded against the old Briggs truck like a cardboard box hitting a steamroller. Valentine looked out the spider-webbed window and saw tattered rabies all around, cocking their heads, milling, either working themselves up to an attack or calming down after one.
Habanero. Habanero!
It would take more than a friendly tap to revive the driver. He was impaled on the steering column like a butterfly on a pin. Brother Mark seemed to have taken a bad hit to the head, too. Blood masked his face, and a matching stain covered the window.
Get away, you sons of bitches! Get!
Careful! Well, yay. Rover's done. We gotta get up to the road.
Oh, let's get the hell out of here.
We'll head for Chuck Wagon. I'll grab Brother Mark. You cover us on the way out to the road.
Roger.
Valentine pulled Brother Mark out of Rover and threw him over his shoulder in a fireman's carry. A rabie with a mustache gone mad sprang around the corner. Duvalier opened the rabie from rib to hip point with her sword. She spun and took a child's head off behind her.
They flipped Bushmaster!
Chuck Wagon had pulled up next to Boneyard, forming a V by having the front bumpers just meet.
Leave them! Get me out of here!
Valentine watched Silvertip extract himself from Bushmaster's cupola, but he'd left an arm behind, crushed against the autocannon. He tottered a few steps toward the tattered crowd beating at the driver's front window, studded leather fist raised. Valentine set down Brother Mark between the two big trucks. He brought down an approaching rabie, then turned towards Bushmaster. Longshot climbed out of one of the side doors, now a top hatch on the prostrate APC. Her bike was strapped there. Valentine watched, astonished.
That coward! There were wounded in there!
A figure totted out from around the back of Bushmaster, looking like a doomed beetle covered by biting army ants. Bee staggered under the weight of a dozen men, women, and children. All Valentine had left for the Type 3 was Quickwood bullets. He sighted carefully. Bee writhed, throwing off a few, but there were too many, clawing and biting. Bee dropped under the weight. Valentine saw her agonized face through the mass of legs.
Sorry, Bee.
Valentine lined up his Type 3, ready to put a bullet in her head. Bee opened her mouth. Valentine only hoped he could end with such courage. With the bayonet, mes enfants. Valentine had never used a rifle bayonet for anything but opening cans since training. but he extended the one on the Type 3. Valentine threw himself into them, lunging and wrenching and clubbing. A hand like a steel claw grabbed his arm, and he responded by giving way to the pull, throwing himself into the opponent. He clubbed the butt of his gun into the Ravi's face again and again. Another lunge, and he lifted a young man off B like a kebab on his bayonet skewer. He noticed Duvalier next to him, slashing like mad, killing anything that approached her like a bug zapper firing cold steel bolts. He got B's arm around his shoulder and dragged her up. Valentine spotted Stuff atop the Bushmaster, his assault shotgun blazing. Chieftain stood at his back, removing fingers and hands from Rabies trying to climb atop the wreck. Valentine realized he was bleeding, but he felt no pain, fighting madness coursing through his nervous system. He stumbled into the boneyard, almost carrying B. B had tears in her good eye, but the other socket was a gory pulp. She had bloody divots in her shoulder.
Doc, you got a shot of something you can give her?
I'll fix her up.
Stuck! Get over here!
No! I still got wounded inside Bushmaster!
A red blossom appeared in Stuck's shoulder, and he toppled off the APC. Valentine looked back at the musical armored car. A rifle barrel projected from a rivet-trimmed slot in the front passenger side window. He could see the grinning faces of the driver and gunner behind their armored glass.
Chieftain, take out those fuckers!
Stuck, despite the rifle wound, was still swinging. He had a knife in each hand and used them like meat hooks, plunging the blades in and pulling his opponents off their feet.
You want a piece of me? There's plenty left, you assholes! Reapers and grogs left enough for you!
Stuck led the remaining Ravies down the road, even as his steps grew more and more erratic. While Stuck attracted Ravy attention, Chieftain was dragging something away from the Bushmaster. Valentine realized it was the 20mm cannon. The big bear, hair bristling up like a cockatiel's, righted it, braced it with his legs, and pointed it at the armored car. Valentine looked at the armored car. The faces in the cabin weren't smiling anymore. Valentine, covered in quick and dirty bandages and iodine, injected with Mrs. Okum's expensive boneyard antibiotics, and feeling like he'd been taken apart and put together by a drunk tinker, investigated the armored car. The back door was open. After the cannon fire had killed the men in the cab, whoever was back there ran off into the growing dark. There were a lot of dials and switches and electronic equipment, a screen and a controller for a camera at the back, and a blinking little box.
Huh. I guess they were attracting those woolies by playing calming music.
Woolies. I like that. We'll have to call them that from now on.
Yeah, it must soothe and attract them at the same time. Must have been what they used to gather them, so the plane could spray them. That's how they killed them off. Yeah, may I, sir?
By all means.
Valentine watched as a few docile Ravies, wandering back from their final encounter with Stuck, shuffled up to the truck to listen. Valentine gave orders that they weren't to be harmed. More important, they weren't to be disturbed by any aggravating noise. They were prevented from engaging in further speculation by the arrival of a company from the Fort Singh Battalion. They were on bikes, Captain Nilay Patel wobbling unevenly at their head.
Cavalry's a little late to the rescue.
Cavalry's having a hard time biking on melting ice. It's Colonel Lambert's idea, sir. We were leading a party of civilians out of Owensboro with the full battalion and field gear. There's a whole Northwest Ordnance column of trucks and motorcycle infantry and light armor getting set to cross the bridge where you got that Kurian.
You were heading toward them or away?
Trying to keep as quiet as possible as we got away, obviously, sir. That Fury on a motorcycle came roaring up and said you'd had some difficulty. Colonel Lambert sent me back for you and Captain Ediak ahead with the dependents, and then organized the rest into a mic force to support either if we ran into trouble. She's a better than fair tactician, sir.
Where'd you get the bicycles?
We found them in a warehouse in Owensboro. Ownership seemed to be a matter of some dispute, as they were meant for transport to a purchaser in the ordnance, but said trader was in no mood to fulfill his end with Ravies in town. Colonel Lambert made him a generous purchase offer.
What was that?
He could ride along with the rest of the civilians, provided the bikes came as well. What are we going to do with this lot?
Give them back to the people who created them.
An excellent idea, sir, but just how do we do that?
We're going to need some noise, Patel. A whole lot of noise.
I'm sure that can be arranged.
My radio's wrecked. Can you put me in touch with Fort Sing?
Valentine put Ma at the wheel of the armored car, as she understood both the armored car's controls and the volume and direction controls on the loudspeakers. Valentine had them turn down the road toward Owensboro. According to Patel, the city had been hard hit by Ravies. B, with her grog gun, the techie Wolf, Bolnitz, for the sake of his story, and Chieftain, just in case, rode in back. Valentine rode shotgun, squeezed onto the seat with Duvalier, who was clinging to him like a limpet.
I'm worried about those bites. First sign of trembling, you go into handcuffs.
Valentine wondered if the bites were taking their toll. He was so very tired. But he had to see this through before he succumbed to exhaustion or the disease. They passed through the belt line of the city and drove among the woolies like wary naturalists intruding on a family of gorillas. They thronged thicker and thicker around the armored car. Suspicious, bloodshot eyes glared at them. Nostrils flared as the woolies took in their scent.
How about a little more soothing music, Ma?
You got it!
Let's try something else!
A big woolly, his mouth ringed by a brown smear of dried blood like a child's misadventure with lipstick, lurched toward the speaker, head cocked. More woolies emerged from alleys and doorways, some dragging dead dogs or more gruesome bits of fodder.
They like that.
Just like the Pied Piper. Gotta teach Hamlin a lesson.
Soon the woolies filled two lanes and the verge to either side of the highway leading out of Owensboro and to the east. They found a slight hill from which they could see the bridge and watch the fireworks.
Cut that music, Ma. Now it's time for the next performance.
Guinevere, Igraine, and Morgana's notes fell upon the highway in a brilliant flash and thunder. The Ravies ran toward the bridge. The forces of the Northwest Ordnance had removed their barricades and some of the fencing to allow the invasion force to rumble across the bridge, its formation undisturbed. The Woolies found no resistance to their rush. Panic struck the soldiers of Ohio's elite force. Immunization or no, an inoculation wasn't proof against one's injection arm being yanked out of its socket. Valentine, having seen the destruction visited on Kentucky, rejoiced at like medicine being distributed among the relief forces parked in a long file along the highway.
B!
Valentine smiled. He formed his hands into wings and had them crash. B grinned from among her bandages, licked a bullet, and slid it into her big grog gun. She raised the barrel to the sky as though it were a flag. The barrel began to descend as smoothly as a fine watch hand, lining up with the approaching plane, which had turned to pass directly over the bridge so that its flight path matched the north-south span. It was a two-engine plane. She'd have to be quick to take out both as it passed over the bridge. The plane dove, seeming to head straight for them. Valentine could see the mist trailing behind it, drifting down towards the unknowing Woolies. Valentine tried to tell himself that he was killing two birds with one stone, not slaughtering civilians to confuse a military offensive.
I know what the editorial in the Clarion would be. Southern Command uses bioweapons in Indiana Massacre.
Of course, you could add some picturesque color thanks to your first-hand experiences.
Hell with them. You know, the publisher used to tell me it's always more complicated than a headline. It's only so much bovine scat one can tolerate. Our headline here is pretty easy. Victory. They should have offered instead of threatened.
I hope we can remember that. You know, Llewellyn or Bolnitz or whatever you want to call yourself, Kentucky could use a newspaper. It's one of the building blocks of a civilization. What do you say? Want to bring the First Amendment back to Kentucky?
I have a feeling that as long as you're here, there'll be no end of stories.
Fort Sing, February, the 56th year of the Kurian Order. The snow has melted, and the winter has returned to normal. Old-timers are predicting an early spring, perhaps to balance the fierce January weather. The losses of Kentucky are great and still being counted, but the damages from the rabies virus could have been much worse. As it turned out, the snow that the Kurians hoped would freeze Kentucky's population in place while their disease swept across the wooded hills worked against its spread rather than for it. The towns hardest hit by the virus were contained by the weather rather than the reverse. It was a meager, hard winter, but it is ending. The shortages and bitter cold are fading as new winds blow and new supply lines are created. Old, tattered uniforms are traded in for the new pattern, and equipment and weapons improve as equipment is gleaned and reconditioned from the fight near the Owensboro West Bridge. Also, there is the knowledge that they won a victory against the best that the Northwest Ordnance could muster, even if the rabies victims paid the tab on that victorious banquet. Valentine never suffered even a quiver from the rabies bites. Had the iodine and antibiotics worked? He didn't know. It hadn't done Kev Rockaway any good. When last Valentine heard, Rockaway was an invalid on the huge ranch straddling the Texas-Oklahoma border country. His mother had retired from public life to nurse him, and the real leader of the ranch was the new ex-bear named Chieftain. Mrs. Okum had arranged for 300 head of first-class beef cattle to be brought to Kentucky in exchange for a few legworms and men with the experience to breed them. According to her, the ranch encompassed a good deal of wasteland that might support legworms. She even spoke of establishing a horse farm or two nearby. Southern Command always needed fresh horse flesh. But that was trivial. Valentine wondered how Southern Command had managed to have an effective vaccine to a strain of rabies that had never been deployed. Or perhaps it was just a very, very happy accident that Southern Command's latest vaccine was also proof against the Kurian's newest weapon. So many questions that needed answering. One morning, Lambert called Valentine into her office with the best news Valentine had heard since Narcisse wrote to him to tell him that she and Blake would await his instructions about joining him in Kentucky.
We're in radio contact with the Bulletproof through the Army of Kentucky. They said a certain oversized yellow grog of old acquaintance staggered into their camp pulling a cart full of kids. He had pink ribbons tied to his ears and a teddy bear riding between his ears.
Anka is alive.
A little chewed up, they said. Their chief promised to send him here just as soon as a worm can be saddled this spring.
Valentine wondered if he was dreaming. If he did see Anka again, he'd send him right back to his people. The Golden Ones had been driven out of Omaha and needed a leader of Anka's caliber. Lambert decided to celebrate the victory with a grand review of her battalion. It couldn't be said that they'd fought a battle, but they performed effectively in the field, keeping the rabies off while they protected Owensboro's civilian population. Valentine recovered fast, as he always did, and managed to stand through the whole review. They formed the men up, four companies strong, plus an almost equal number of auxiliaries and an oversized support pool. The Southern Command remainders stood in a quiet group off to one side, watching the ex-Quislings in their polished boots and fresh uniforms. Valentine was proud to see them under their new regimental flag. The banner flew overhead, and even though they were a smallish regiment, it added a distinguished air. The flag couldn't be said to be fancy. Valentine had worked out the design with Ediac, now in charge of the headquarters platoon. He'd loosely based it on an old Free French flag. It was red and blue, with a big white five-pointed star dividing it at the center and large enough to touch the edges of the banner with its top point and bottom 2 feet. A little black pyramid with a Roman numeral 1 in silver filled the bottom center between the two legs of the star. With the flag flying, Lambert stepped to the podium.
Legion soldier, you are a volunteer, serving the cause of freedom with honor and teamwork. Each Legion soldier is your brother in arms, whatever his origin, his past, or his creed. You show him the same respect that binds the members of the same family bloodline. You respect the traditions of these United States. Discipline and training are your strengths. Courage and truth are the virtues that will one day make you admired among your peers and in the history books. You are proud of your place in the Legion. You are always orderly, clean, and ready. Your behavior will never give anyone reason to reproach you. Your person, your quarters, and your base are always clean and ready for any inspection or visitor. You are an elite soldier. You consider your weapon as your most precious possession. You constantly maintain your physical fitness, level of training, and readiness for action. Your mission is sacred. It is carried out until the end, in respect of the Constitution, the customs of war, and law of civil organization if need be, at the risk of your own life in defense of these ideals. In combat, you act without passion or hatred. You respect surrendered enemies. You never surrender your dead, your wounded, or your weapons. You consider all of the above your oath and will carry it out until released by your superiors or through death.
Ediak modeled the new uniform. The cut was similar to his old shit detail company's utility worker uniforms, right down to the tool vest, the padded knees and elbows, a simple fold of the fleece made for light and comfortable cushioning, and the pen holders on the shoulder. The outer shell was a thick nylon blend canvas of Evansville tenting, the inner the soft fleece so generously supplied by Southern Command. The color was a rather uninspiring, but usefully muted, rifle green. She daubed hers with gray and brown and black into a camouflage pattern. Valentine tried to read their faces. Were the men standing a little taller? He could tell Lambert's speech, the new flag, and the new uniform had their interest and attention. He spent two frantic days trying to make contact with the bulletproof. He wouldn't believe the news about Anka until he heard his old friend's voice. In between haunting the communications center and helping Patel and Ediak evaluate the new NCOs, he was asked to visit Doc. Doc had stayed behind to research the new strain of ravies the Kurian Order had deployed that winter. Despite the graying hair and the bent frame, he'd been putting in long hours 7 days a week. He'd spent an inordinate amount of time on the radio, mostly advising communities how to prevent cholera and deal with an isolated ravie found here and there, half-starved and confused. The challenge had reawakened the committed researcher who'd lost himself on the Hooked O.C. ranch. The hospital was formerly the servants' quarters for the estate. The patients had small, comfortable, climate-controlled rooms. They turned a former garage into an operating room and the old office into an examining room and dispensary. Doc had taken one of the little patient rooms for his research. What little equipment he had, he'd brought with him to begin with.
Major Valentine, I have some exciting news. Will you indulge me?
Sure, Doc.
I have some analysis to show you.
Doc went to his closet. On the inside, he'd pinned up a map of Kentucky. He flipped on a bright track light that placed a spot of light on the map when the door was all the way open. The glare made Valentine's head hurt, and he felt a little nauseous as Doc invited him over to look at Kentucky, covered in incredibly tiny notations.
Doc, I've been meaning to ask, wherever did you learn to write that small?
My father was a hog man, Major. He didn't like to waste good feed money on paper, so I learned to take notes in the margins of my classmates' discards. By the time I was studying biology at Jasper Pauley...
Never mind. I didn't know you'd been tracking our trip to get the Okum boy so closely.
I haven't. This is an epidemiological study. With rabies, geography is a strong predictor. Rabies sufferers naturally seek water, whether for sustenance or its cooling effect. Given no higher attractions, such as noise or a food source, they will find water and then follow small tributaries to a larger river, rather in the manner one is taught to find civilization if lost in the outdoors. Of course, my information is sketchy and mostly based on radio reports, but the dates and places of outbreaks show a curious track, don't you think?
It follows the arc of our path through north-central Kentucky.
Always 48 to 72 hours behind us. Grand Junction, Elizabethtown, Danville. It always starts in places we'd visited. We've been a four-wheel Typhoid Mary through Kentucky, Major Valentine.
Someone's infected but not showing symptoms? They shook hands with a Kentuckian and spread the virus without knowing what they were doing? Well, I thought rabies didn't pass through casual contact. You had to break the skin or eat contaminated food or some such.
Even if it had been via casual contact, it spread too fast. No, the contact network for any one of us is not wide enough. Not for this kind of effect in only 48 hours. There were multiple infections. It had to be placed in a food source or water supply.
You're saying someone in our column spread it intentionally?
I'm saying that is what my analysis indicates. My sourcing may be faulty, There might be a statistical anomaly, as our communication with Fort Sang relied on relays with stops behind us. So the data points are naturally skewed to cover our trail. But there were no alarms from outside, say, Bowling Green or Frankfurt, as you would expect from a population center that wide.
Why would the Kurians use us? You'd think trained harpies or...
I'm no strategist, Major.
The Kurians would want to use the forces of Southern Command to make sure Kentucky would know who to blame for losses. Give every family a grievance.
No.
Major Valentine?
It couldn't be.
Valentine shook his head. Double cross, triple cross, cross back. Kurian treachery was like a hall of mirrors. Somewhere, a vulnerable back was showing to plunge the knife in. No doubt there were Kurian agents dropping a few broad hints, revealing a few interesting details, in minds willing to believe the worst about outsiders. Bears weren't well understood even in the UFR. Many a regular citizen heard only of howling teams of battle-maddened men killing anything that moved. He could see an average Kentuckian believing Southern Command had brought a contagion into their land, probably by accident. But the dead were still the dead. Valentine summoned Lambert, Duvalier, Ediac, Gamecock, and Nile Patel to the old parlor of the estate house. They'd cleaned it out and were in the process of turning it into a sort of theater that could show either movies or live plays. It could also serve as a courtroom, if need be. Fratt stood before him, his bright new bars shining.
Why'd you do it, Captain?
Do what, sir?
Betray us.
What? I don't understand.
I had that big satchel you carried, the one like mine, tested. There was some spilled preservative in there and a hell of a lot of rabies virus in the preservative fluid. What did you do? Put it in the water supply of the towns we visited?
We're going to have to handle this ourselves. If it gets out of Kentucky that we were the vector that spread the disease...
I'll do it. I brought him into Southern Command. I'll take him out. On your knees, Fratt.
But sir, I can explain.
On your knees!
Valentine pulled the old .45 out of its holster. A gift from another man he'd brought over from the Quislings. Or did he hate Fratt for playing the same trick he'd so often played? Infiltrating, striking from within, being better at the deadly game? What kind of hold did Kerr have on Fratt's mind? They found a bright young boy, trained him, and then sent him out among decent people like the Carlsons, probably to learn more about the underground in the Kurian zone, the mysterious lodges Valentine had heard mentioned now and again. Surely Fratt was bright enough to see that life in the Freehold was better than that in the Kurian zone. What did they promise? Life eternal? Did 14-year-old boys even consider questions of mortality?
It's an ugly truth, Fratt. Shit rolls downhill. It's hard to stand in front of a superior and say, we threw the dice on this one and lost. Someone must be to blame. You made the blame list.
Did Fratt, miserable and shaking, know how like brothers they were? An accident of birth put Valentine in the woods of the Boundary Waters, Fratt in some Chicago brownfield. If Valentine had been raised up in the Kurian zone, would he have answered the bugle call of the youth vanguard, done his damnedest on the physical and mental tests? Valentine stepped behind him. His .45 had never felt so heavy.
I want my second chance.
What?
You heard me. I'll put up my right hand and take the oath. Put in my ears just like the rest. Wash all this shit away.
He's helped kill thousands in the clans. Whole families wiped out. You can't just let him walk away from that like a wet Baptist.
Valentine wondered. A highly trained ex-Kurian agent could be a valuable asset. Had Southern Command ever taken one alive? If they had, he wouldn't know about it. But the virus Fratt spread had killed thousands. Even though it had backfired on the Kurians, there were men, women, and children all over Kentucky who died in the madness, from the disease itself, or the stress brought on by the change, or in the fighting. Fratt raised his right hand.
I freely, and of my own resolve...
Shut up!
Valentine had to make a decision. Is an ideal, a collection of words that makes everyone feel cleaner, purer, worth anything if you can just discard it at will? He'd promised every Quisling who came over a new future if they sweated and suffered and risked for the cause. Suppose Fratt meant it and was ready to put his obvious talents to work for the new freehold coalescing in Kentucky. Valentine had squeezed his conscience through the keyhole of a technicality before. He pressed the pistol to the back of Fratt's head. He couldn't do it. Cowardice or compassion? He pulled back the gun.
If you're gonna take that oath, take it on your feet, Frat.
Don't be a fool, Valentine.
You wanna shoot him? Go ahead. It's not so easy to do.
The Colonel is right, Val. Quisling Snot'll turn on us first chance he gets. You can't change him. No more than you can train a scorpion to quit killing beetles.
Maybe. But I'm also an officer. That little hearing we had may have returned a verdict, but wasn't sent to headquarters for confirmation. I'm ready to suspend the execution on that technicality, barring an emergency that requires me to carry out the sentence. We're both hung men, Frat. We'd have nooses around our necks in civilized lands, but we're still kicking.
I'm not afraid of that gun. It's those motherfuckers who need to be afraid. They said they'd protect me.
The piece of shit doesn't give a damn about the damage he's done. I'll stagger all the way to Little Rock if I have to get that sentence confirmed.
I was following orders. Same as you all when you burned out Louisville. Or when the Resistance killed every trustee on my block. Even my grandmother and my little sister. We all got sins worth a stone or two.
He's joined up. He'll follow a better set of orders from now on.
Valentine needed air and light. He walked across the grounds of Fort Sing, Duvalier trailing carefully in his footsteps like Piglet tracing a heffalump. They paused on the little hill sheltering the guns and looked at the old manor house. Some soldiers were putting in new military-strength block glass windows, yet another in the hundreds of odd jobs needed to turn an old park and former estate home into a proper military base worthy of a new freehold.
I'm ready for this winter to be over, Val.
Not yet, Smoke. There's a lot to do before spring.
Vampire Earth, Book 8, Winter Duty, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009, Eric E. Frisch. Published by arrangement with Trident Media Group, LLC, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Tim Getman, Lily Beacon, Casey Platt, James Keegan, Dan Stevens, James Lewis, Kate Foster, Tony Nam, Mort Shelby, Dylan Lynch, Joseph Thornhill, Julie Ann Elliott, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Ren Casey, Tim Carlin, Scott McCormick, Barbara Pennellini, Elizabeth Jernigan, Eric Messner, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Michael Glenn, and Terrence Aislefour. Red Shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. Directed by Ken Jackson. Dialogue editing and sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Additional music by Brian Patton, Nathaniel Perry, Dan Sondak, and Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you've enjoyed Vampire Earth, be sure to look for the Demon Cycle trilogy by Peter V. Brett and the Vata's War series by Elizabeth Moon, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics, Green Lantern, Sleepers, Book 3.
Wait, you're a Green Lantern, right? You can't!
The spirit of vengeance has come for you, Detective.
The world, the universe, something's wrong.
Of course it is.
How do you know?
If it wasn't, neither of us would dress this way.
I'm human again. This is how it starts, isn't it?
What the hell is going on?
Best I can tell, pal, the apocalypse.
Cal! What happened?
Hal Jordan tried to kill me.
Jade, Kyle's ring has security lockouts that prevent others from using it. The only person who could possibly use it is the ring's original owner.
That man is a killer, and now you want me to just give him Kyle's ring?
Kyle battled one sleeper and almost lost the solar system. We're facing thousands.
Promise me you won't go insane and destroy entire planets again.
I can't. Oh my God. It's the JLA. They're all sleepers.
And so Hal Jordan dies, and Sinestro lives.
Green Lantern and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.